Welcome back to the Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
Today on the show, we have Matt Cashel. If you belong to rockslide.com, you already know who Matt Cashel is. If you don't belong to Rockslide, just go in and Google Rockslide and Optics, and any of Matt's Optics articles will pop up. Matt's basically what I consider it. This is a term of endearment. He is our optics geek. Is that a fair assessment, Matt?
Okay. Yeah, I'll take it.
I love glassing. I love optics. If you get in and you read any of Matt's optics, he takes it to the next level. He breaks it down to resolution, chromatic aberration, big $5 words I've never heard of. But anyways, Matt, you started with Rockslide in 2012. Tell us a little bit about your background in hunting.
Well, I've been born and raised in Montana, and I don't know if there's many better places to grow up hunting than Montana. There's a lot of hunting opportunity there, and I just had a great childhood following my dad and my uncle around the woods and kind of figuring out how to scare elk, that kind of thing. And then as I grew older and went through school, became more of a priority for me, and ended up doing a lot more of it in my free time. It's just something I love to do. It's like most of the people that are on Rockslide, it's just a passion for me.
So you do it all. You do rifle, archery, pretty much the whole gamut of hunting.
Yeah, well, if it's in the woods and I got an opportunity to punch a tag, that's where I want to be.
If you've read any of Matt's articles, like I said, or any of his videos, you can tell Matt has really perfected his craft. How did you get into the writing side of it, or when did that come along?
Well, I kind of just got into posting with like-minded people online, and then kind of found a home at Rockslide, and that's where, you know, the people I respected were there, and they were talking about various gear and optics and rifles and bows and that sort of thing. So went there, and then I started posting, and I got a private message from Aaron Snyder one day, and he said, "Hey, why don't you submit an article?" So I did, and that's how it got started.
Yeah, he wrote a lot. He's written a lot of optics articles for us. One of the best articles that you've written for us, and you're going to have to tell me the name because I forgot, but what was the first one? Do you remember you wrote for Rockslide?
Well, I think it was two articles. And I can't remember which one came first, but they were what we are looking for and what we aren't looking for.
Yes, those are the names of them. Sorry, I couldn't remember that. But those two articles, and remember, I've hunted since I was 12, and I love to glass. But those two articles taught me more about glassing than probably any articles I've ever read. So where did you come up with those? Or how did you come up with those?
Well, first off, thanks, mm-hmm. I guess. and secondly, that was kind of a natural progression, really, because I noticed years ago that, well, first off, I didn't even use optics when I went hunting.
Really?
You know, the only optic I had when I was out hunting was the scope on the rifle. And then I finally was able to afford a pair of binoculars, and the first ones I remember right now, they were Leupold Mesa 8x42s. And it, like, changed everything about hunting for me. So, and those were pretty good binoculars.
How long into your hunting career before you jumped to binoculars?
Oh, I probably was out of high school.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So did you start when you were, like, 12, too? Like, on your own going out hunting? Or were you still kind of following your dad around?
Well, I was hunting with family at 12, yeah. Sure. In Montana then. That's as young as you could be.
Mm. So good 6 years, at least into your hunting career, you didn't have binoculars.
Well, you know, I guess we occasionally had binoculars mm-hmm. with us when we were at the pickup or that sort of right. thing. But I don't think I'm alone with other hunters of my generation that it just wasn't that big of a priority. You kind of spotted right. what you spotted mm-hmm. or you walked up animals and kicked them up and that sort of thing. And that's kind of how we hunted. Mm-hmm. Or when we were elk hunting, we did a lot and we had some success in tracking elk in the snow. and then coming up on him that way in the woods and getting a shot at a close distance.
So is it kind of surprising to you to see how much people rely on optics now? Like it's like a staple. Like it's unheard of to like not have binoculars when for so many years you guys just didn't have them, didn't use them, and didn't need them basically.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising, but even more surprising now is when there's people out there that don't use them still, you know, and I still talk to people and they're not using optics. They figure like if they're that far away, I don't want to go after them, that sort of thing.
Sure.
True.
That makes sense.
So they're getting back to it now. You got your first pair of Leupold binoculars.
Yeah.
So how did that change the game for Matt?
Well, it changed everything because I quit walking so much.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Montana, you know that walking is not the easiest thing in some of that terrain.
Yeah, so I spent a whole lot more time sitting and glassing and spending the time picking apart terrain and finding those animals where they were. And my success rate went through the roof. So I really got into optics because of that, and I wanted to take that advantage and gain a better advantage by learning about the optics that were helping me out.
So with that, I guess, stepped approach, what was the next step there? Because if you go in and you guys read those articles, those are pretty in-depth articles. So obviously you got that binocular and you continued to progress to better and better optics. And then what changed in your mind? Because I guess the thing I always hear is a guy looking at $800 binoculars or $500 binoculars will say, well, I picked up a pair of Swarovski SLCs or ELs or Leica UltraVids, and I can't tell the difference between a pair of $800 binoculars and a pair of $2,000 binoculars.
I've said that.
Yeah, Tanya said guilty. That lots of times.
But I'm blind.
So in that progression, what changed in your mind?
Well, again, it had a lot to do with how much time I was spending behind the eyepieces. So if I think that the average person that just looks between a set of binoculars, let's say at a sporting goods store or whatever, and they do a quick comparison, I think more often than not, you're going to hear a lot of that, well, that's not that much different, that sort of thing. But when you actually go out there and you're spending hours behind them, you start to think, you know what? I can't quite make that out. Or you try another brand or another style of optic and you're kind of, it seems a lot more apparent. So when you spend a lot of time out there, you'll notice things that you didn't notice before.
Yeah. So you're saying that if you go down to Sportsman's Warehouse or Cabela's and you grab pretty much any binocular in that lighting will look pretty good.
Well, I think at first blush, a lot of times that's the first impression.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that the day that you handed me a pair of Swarovs and then another pair of binoculars, I mean, looking at them, looking through both of them for 10 seconds, I couldn't really tell the difference. But after starting to hunt and sitting out there for hours and hours glassing, I could tell the difference. I mean, and you've made that comment that at first I couldn't, you know, see the difference between higher end optics and lower end optics. And then after spending some time glassing, that the difference became very apparent pretty quickly.
So it was 5 to 6 years before your binoculars came into the game. How long after that before a spotter came into the mix?
Almost right away. Yeah. Because magnification can be addictive, you know, so you get that 8x power and you start thinking, you know what, well, maybe more is better. And that's kind of the progression of how things go. So you end up thinking, well, maybe I'll get some really powerful binoculars, and that doesn't work out well if you try it. Try hand-holding really high-powered binoculars, that sort of thing. There aren't many people that can really make that happen. And so you move to a spotting scope, it's on a tripod, you get a stable view, and you get really high magnification levels. And you start pairing that with your binocular and coming up with a system.
All right, what system do you run right now if we were to go look in Matt Cashel's backpack?
Well, most of the time, I have a Swarovski ATX 85mm objective spotting scope. That's my go-to spotting scope. And then I have a Miopta 10x42 HD binoculars. And for several years, those have been my choice. They're just really comfortable for me to use. And the performance is really high, especially when value is taken into account.
Matt does pretty much all of our binocular and spotting scope reviews. So in the last couple of years, what I guess binocular have you seen that kind of blew you away?
Well, I suppose that there's been different binoculars that have blown me away for different reasons. One is the Maven B2 that I looked at. It blew me away that somebody came in and they're like really first attempt and came up with a really capable binocular right out of the gates. That one really blew me away. Before that, the first real budget binocular that had really good performance that I looked at was Vortex Diamondback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now a lot of the other companies have competing products in that price range, but that was like the first one that really was able to give a good hunter reliable performance at a really low price. So that one blew me away.
The Vortex Diamondback?
Yeah.
Really? I don't think I've ever looked through them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're used to really high-end glass, you're going to notice that they aren't.
Right.
But if you're used to really low-end glass and you're looking to get something that you can use in the woods and make good use out of for a low price, that's a great option.
And what do you know what the price point is off the top of your head?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but last I checked, they're right around $200.
So in that 500 below, would there be another one you'd throw in the mix?
Well, you know, you have to start taking into account sales and used. Another really good part of the optics industry is this trend towards really good warranties. Mm-hmm. So buying used doesn't have the same risk that it does in a lot of other equipment choices. So you can end up finding, you know, used binoculars that were in that 500 plus range down, you know, sub $300. So
it's a very good point. And like in the $800 to $1,200 to $1,300 range, what's your choices there?
Well, I still think Miopta HD 10x42 for that configuration, 10x42 is the model to beat. And it's been there for me for quite some time. That's the one I have access to a lot of optics, thanks to RockSlide and the opportunities I've had with RockSlide. And that's still the one I choose more often than not. And I think that says a lot for it, in my opinion.
Right.
That it's a perfectly capable binocular. And it's in that price range, although this year, like a lot of the optics, they're taking a price hike.
Are they?
So the retail prices on a lot of the upper-end optics are going to be higher than they have been.
So in the 8 to 12, you have the Mioptas, you have the Vortex Razor, you have the Maven, the B2s, the 11, and the 9 to, what is it, 45. You have the B1s, 10x42. Is there anything we're missing in there you can think of, that mid-range?
Well, there's a lot of offerings out there. You know, Swarovski has their companion line
right. That's
in that price range.
But those are 8x32s, right? Or 8x30s.
Right, so they're 30 millimeter objectives, yeah.
And the full-size binoculars, because that's one of the biggest things brought up on RockSlide is that middle group. And, I mean, there's always the big three. I personally think it's more of the big two. I'm not a Zeiss fan. I'm a Swarovski and Leica fan. But that middle price, is there anything that we're missing out of those that we haven't brought up?
Well, I think there's a lot of them. There's some new companies coming on. There's some offerings from Nikon that seem to get overlooked a lot that are pretty capable optics. A lot of importers are bringing really capable binoculars from overseas that the price just keeps going down on. So hunters really have a lot of different choices. But the ones that you talked about are ones that have received a lot of exposure on RockSlide and right. I think are really good choices, which is why they're receiving that exposure. So as far as the razor goes, you talk to people that have used it, and it's a love it and hate it on that one. I think they're pretty good. They're pretty good binocular. They have a lot of things going for, or they have one thing going for them that some of the competition doesn't have, and that's weight. They're a lot lighter than some of the competitors, and they have really good wide fields of view. So that is a good option, but you know, you got to judge your own preferences. So right. It's not going to be the same for everybody.
Right. What about comfort level? Like when you're holding them in your hands, like whichever, like fits. That was one big difference I noticed between the ones that I had looked at is if you're glassing for hours and you don't have them on a stand, like you have done recently, a pair can just fit really good. And it's like, there's more thought that's been put into the design of them besides the glass.
You're talking about the ergonomics.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. So the ergos are something that is kind of individual to the user, sure. too. Like a lot of the optics choices come down to that individual preferences. A lot of the companies are making good products.
Which I think prices. A lot of people don't really, it's like a afterthought. But then when you think about the fact that you might have them in your hands for 6 hours at a time or however long you're glassing, it should be a bigger factor. I think personally, because I can get frustrated and put a pair down because they're uncomfortable to sit and hold.
Yeah, you hear about it a lot, really, at the high end of the market with the big three, you know, Swarovski, Leica, and Zeiss, that those are the ergonomics end up being a deciding factor for a lot of people because you have this really high optical performance, but their ergonomics are really different between the flagship models from those companies. So I think if you are in the market at the high end, you really need to put your hands on them before you commit to one or the other, or even better, go to a good retailer that will let you purchase and return them after real in-the-field use. That's the best evaluation.
Oh, I've swapped out a pair. When we've been hunting, he's had a pair in his bino pouch, and I've had another pair in mine, different companies, and about after a day or so, I'll have switched them because I like the ones that he's packed better than the ones that he packed for me. And it makes a big difference.
She's very fond of the 12x50 ELs. She kept stealing them from me.
I'm blind. I needed the better glass. I think that's fair.
It's true. If price is no object to Matt, what binoculars would be in his pack?
Well, you know, that's a hard question because I really like binoculars.
I know you do. That's why I asked that, because Matt loves. If we pretty much, if I say, "Hey, Matt, we can get this. Do you want to review it?" I already know his answer. So,
yeah. So, I really do like the Mioptas. I think that their ergonomics don't work for everybody, and so some people bring them down for that. I'd be totally comfortable hunting with them for the rest of my days. The performance level is good, and they're really durable. They have all those other tangible qualities. But the ones that I like the view of the most, and this hasn't always been this way, they grew on me, were the Swarovski ELs, the newest field flattened Swarovision model. I've used them in the field for short periods of time, but frequently over the last few years, and they've really grown on me. Originally, the flat field kind of played with my vision a little bit, but once I grew accustomed to that, I really like that view. And if I had to choose one, I guess that would be my top choice.
Would it be the 10s, 12s?
The 10s, yeah.
10x42 ELs?
What about for a spotting scope?
Well, the spotting scope I have is one of the most expensive ones, and that's the one I choose to use. So,
and that's the ATX 85.
The ATX 85. All is not perfect in there. You know, it does have a really flat field, but there is a little chromatic aberration at the edge of the field that I think is actually a little better controlled in their less expensive model. But the other areas of performance make up for it, so I really like that spotting scope.
On my side, if I was to pick the mid-range and I was to pick the high range, I would personally take, I like a little more magnification, I would take that mid-range is the 11x545 B2s. high range, I take the 12 by 50. I love the 12 by 50 ELs. Spotter wise, I really like the Maven Spotter. They sent Tanya one, and I steal it quite often, even though it has her name on it. It says Tanya, the boss, Avery, is actually etched into it. So I don't like that part, but I do.
Brenton did that for me because he knew that he would steal it often.
Right. I think that's a really good piece of glass for the price, and I'm with Matt. I don't think the ATX can be beat. I run a 65, but I really love that spotter.
Yeah, you know, if Koa changed a few things about the armoring on their Promenar 88, I might choose it over the ATX.
Really?
It actually performs optically, as I noted in my review. That's getting to be a couple years old now, I think, but it has a tiny edge optically, I think, but they're very, very close. And the Swarovski with that awesome fit and finish and the great rubber armoring, I never use a case on it, and it still looks like brand new. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many hundreds of miles that thing has traveled in my pack. But
nice. You recently did a Zeiss 10x42 SF review for Rockslide. What you gave it pretty good reviews. How do you think? I am not a Zeiss guy. I see blue in Zeiss for some reason. How does that fit in? Where do they fit in to the mix of the big three in your mind?
Well, I think they're right there with the other top competitors. And I do. I think I would put Miopta's top offerings in with that crew too. I don't think they're a whole step down. You know, I think that they're competitive as well. But
and what are the Miopta's price point? Because that's pretty amazing.
Well, I think they're retailing around $1,400 now. So
you're putting those in with $2,500 binoculars, and you're saying they compete no problem.
Well, I'm saying they compete. You know, in some areas I like them better, and in some areas
that's about half the price.
Right.
Yeah, they're a great binocular.
That's a big difference.
That's pretty amazing. And again, I think Matt would agree with this: is you got to go look, because I've been with several guys that look through the 12x50 ELs. You know, I've had the 10x42 Ultravids, and they say, "Hey, I don't like these. I like these better." So I think each individual needs to take the time and go and look. These are just suggestions. But what do you think about that, Matt?
Well, I think the proof is in the pudding, right? It's right. The actual field use that's really going to tell you. And so, you know, my opinions about the Miopta are in the field with the Miopta and with other top performing binoculars. And that's the way I see it. I do think the Zeiss offerings are way up there. I think that I don't think you're far off on the blue. You're saying you see the blue, and that has a lot to do with how they design the optics so that they're getting whatever design goal they have. That's not unintentional. You know, they're having certain wavelengths of light passing through the optic system for a reason. And typically, you know, if you're seeing a lot of blue, they could be trying to increase low light transmission and making it appear brighter, the view appear brighter.
Yeah, that on that, whatever the coating they're put on, the thing that, for me, the Swarovskis, the SLCs and the ELs with the fill flatteners, it doesn't matter either one. I just seem to see like elk or deer or bears. They just have like almost a 3D pop to me. Is that just solely in the coatings, you believe?
Well, it's a whole system, right? It's a design, and I've talked to optical engineers and designers. They put the whole system together, and the coatings work with how the lens formula is, the number of elements in the system, how the lenses are ground and polished. Everything is part of the system.
Gotcha. So we actually should have brought this up when we first started the binocular thing. When you get a pair of binoculars, what do you do? What are you looking for, and what are you looking at when you start glassing through them to say yay or nay on a pair of binoculars?
Well, the first thing I do is set the diopter. So you need to set it for your eyes. Otherwise, you're not really seeing what the optic is capable of. So right. I like to do that on a tripod. if I can, so I can get the setting as perfect as possible. And then what I look for is, you know, I do the normal thing, general impressions first, right? You kind of use it looking around at various objects, whatever you're deciding to get an impression overall of the view. And then I move on to, I'll use an optics chart, a lot of times a resolution chart, to see if I can make out clean lines. And then another use of the optics chart is evaluating for chromatic aberration or any other aberrations in the system. You can see that in a high contrast target, like a resolution chart.
So on that resolution chart, where the hell do you even find that? You just buy it from somebody, or how does that work?
Well, Edmunds Optics is a optics company that sells single lenses, complete optical systems, that sort of thing, and they produce a really nice resolution chart, and you can order directly from them.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, you're not just walking outside looking at a mountain, looking at some farmer's cows and saying, yep, I like these ones.
Well, no, I try to evaluate the optic as thoroughly as I can, so I know what I'm getting into. And then that usually translates well into the field, into a optic that's performing well.
I couldn't agree more. If you go, and again, I'm going to beat this to death, but if you go to Rockslide and you look up optics, you'll find Matt's articles, and I dare you to find better written articles and better, like, detailed a breakdown of why he likes them. But the one question I got to ask you is, what the hell is chromatic aberration, and how do you see it? Because I don't see it very often, but when I do see it, it jumps out at me.
Well, you need a disclaimer first that once you know what it is and how to look for it, you're going to, and it could ruin optics that you've loved for years.
And I have heard that from many of people that you've explained to what it is, say, I wish Matt would have never explained that to me.
Yeah, a lot of people happily use their binoculars in ignorance for years until they finally learn how to look for it.
I agree, because I'm the same way now.
But and then it becomes an obsession. It's one of the first things I look for. But it is also, the best optical systems are well corrected for it, so it is something to look for. And what it is anytime light passes through glass, the wavelength splits slightly into different wavelengths in the visible spectrum, so that when you have an object that's got a lot of contrast in it, you know, black on white, like, say, a snowy burn, you know, burnt trees over snow, high contrast situations, you'll see along the borders of that contrast change, color on that border change, you'll see color fringing, and it's typically magenta or yellow, amber, and it's like it's kind of got a shine of color. And it makes it hard to see that hard edge. So when you're looking to see maximum resolution, chromatic aberration is going to interfere with your ability to do that. And that's why it's so important.
Is there any binoculars out there that are the worst for it? Or are there any that are the best?
Well, typically as you go up in price, as you might expect, right, they get a lot better at controlling it. But as, you know, whatever you want to call it, ED, HD, LD, whatever the marketers want to call it, when you get into those certain special types of optical glass that reduce that dispersion of light, you're going to see better performance there, typically. And that technology is filtering down to even, you know, lower-end optics. So lower-end optics are getting better, but let's say you took that diamond back from Vortex. That's a entry-level binocular, but I think still pretty capable. You're going to see a lot more chromatic aberration when you compare that to a really high-end binocular. And once you know how to look for it, that difference is going to be really obvious under high-contrast viewing.
So you're saying if you're not able to buy a high-end, then don't look for it?
Yeah, that might be the best.
That's probably the best suggestion yet.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I've actually talked to people that have used optics, and they tell me that they really like that as like a feature of the system. They're like, oh, well, everything seems to sort of glow. when I'm looking at it through these binoculars.
You're kidding, really?
Good. Yeah. So
once you, I've seen it, you know, and I've, before I had Rockside, I had some high-end binoculars, but I didn't know what the name was, and I love glassing, but I am not a glassic geek nerd. I don't like delve in it like Matt does, and that's not a bad thing. Matt explained a lot of things to me, and I had seen it, and then I wouldn't see it, and then I would see it, and then Matt kind of broke it down to me of what I was looking for, and now I see it instantly if it has it, and it's actually kind of a curse.
Yeah, it really is. So it's easiest to correct on axis, meaning right down the line of the optical system. So right in the center of the field of view, it's easiest to correct, and you'll see it the least there. And then as you move away from the axis, you're going to see it more and more towards the edge of the field of view. So I will put a high contrast object right in the middle and see if I can see it there. And then I'll move it to the edge, and you can just see it ignite, like catch fire on that viewing as you move to the edge.
If you can see this on video, Matt, you can tell Matt gets all excited. You can see the fire in his eyes when he talks chromatic aberration. But anyways, another question that we get a shit ton on Rockslide, and I just see it as a general question, is, well, they say ED glass, they say HD glass, they say this glass has fluoride. Is there any way you can kind of clarify those different columns or check marks to for the consumer to not be fooled, or easier to recognize a pair of glass that's,
yeah, what the hell does that all mean?
Fluoride. Is a fluoride mean this HD? Does it have to have fluoride to be HD? What the hell does ED mean?
Well,
yeah, I think we can
Tanya's bad.
I think we can clear it up a little bit in that it's all the same thing.
Really?
Those are just marketing terms that are different. It really comes back to, like, I think it was Nikon started putting ED, which is extra low dispersion glass, in their lenses, their telephoto lenses, way back in the 80s. And they really reduced chromatic aberration in their lenses, and obviously in the pictures that you took through those lenses, by doing that. So what they did was they added, well, there's several different ways to do it, but it all works the same way. The light that passes through the lens doesn't disperse. It doesn't, those wavelengths don't split as much. So it becomes a lot less apparent. So when they say HD, high density, or high definition, or whatever they want to call it, ED or LD, low dispersion, they're all saying the same thing, that they have a special glass element, or even in some cases, like the Kawa 88, they have a fluorite element crystal. One of the lenses is made out of fluorite crystal, which has minimal dispersion. So they get really low levels of chromatic aberration through that system.
Because I believe not all of them obviously have the fluoride. I think, believe Maven's HD, their spotter has fluoride in it, correct?
I believe that they have glass that includes fluoride, okay. Just like
that's the key.
The fluoride, just like the other manufacturers do. So Swarovski's HD glass has that. Leica's Ultravid HDs have fluorite glass in them. The only one I'm aware of that uses a crystal is the Kawa.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's interesting information. All right, Matt. Well, we're getting over our 30-minute mark. Like I said before, if you want to learn about optics, Google rockslide.com, optics, Matt Cashel, and you'll learn pretty much everything you need to know about optics. Do you have any plans coming or reviews coming out that you can tell us about, Matt, that you know of?
Well, I'm going to be putting the finishing touches on a review of the Swarovski Z6 rifle scope that I used this year. And then we'll see what happens here at SHOT Show and see if we can't get some stuff lined up for 2017.
That's what I was going to ask. What are you going to be looking for at the SHOT Show? What are you... what have you been excited to check out that may or may not be here? What companies are you going to hit up while you're here in Vegas?
Well, I'm going to try to hit up all the big names in optics. Every year I kind of go through my checklist of optics and make it to everybody's booth. I like to talk to somebody there. And I want to get an idea of what's coming, even if it's not on the show floor yet. But what I'm most excited for is something that I don't know is coming.
So is there anything that you've heard about that you're going to check out? I mean, is there any products that maybe our listeners haven't heard about yet, but you've heard rumors about that is supposed to be here at SHOT?
I don't know.
Like, spoiler alert.
I don't know if any of them are going to be at SHOT or not, but I know that there's the competition among optics manufacturers is fierce. They're working hard to push each other, so there should mm-hmm. be something neat to look at.
Nice. I think that's a good thing for consumers when the competition gets pretty fierce and they're held to higher standards, I think, optics companies and any companies, really.
I think that what I'd like to see is more weight and bulk savings in sport optics. I think that that's where the industry could go, and I hope to see some more of that using lighter materials, maybe integrating something like Phase Fresnel lens system in a sport optic, which hasn't been done yet, but has been done in camera lenses to really reduce that size and weight. So
that'd be great for backpack hunting. Yeah, for sure.
I agree. Well, Matt, I appreciate you coming on. I will have you on again in the future, and we'll talk rifle scopes, because I'm sure both of us have a lot to say, and I think we use rifle scopes in a different way, so it'd be a good podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, guys, so that's Matt Cashel. Again, check him out on RockSlide. Just type in RockSlide Optics in Google, and it'll bring him up. Thanks a lot for coming on, Matt.
Thanks Matt.
Thanks for having me.